It's time for the End of Conversation podcast with funny man Damian Lemon and the voice of your choice, Ali Muhammad.
Yeah. You know what time it is. It's In the Conversation, the podcast. And by, you know, the sound of my voice, you already know that D. Lemon is not in the building today, but Mr. Muhammad is. We have a special guest, though. You know what I'm saying? Coming all the way live from Harlem. You know what I'm saying? Director, actress, model. What else you do? Former model. That's how we going to say it. Former model.
You knew what that laugh was about.
Tony Ty in the building.
Hi.
Rear it up. That's how you coming in?
I'm out here.
You out where?
I'm out here.
Out where?
I'm just out here. I'll be out here doing stuff.
Oh, okay. Sounded homeless. Like, what the fuck going on? What's good?
I feel that way. I haven't been home much in the past. The whole month of September. I think I slept in my bed like 3 times.
But that's far from homeless.
No, I'm not homeless.
Exactly. You was on an Instagram tour. I don't know if it was a tour, but it was like exotic places.
Yeah, I'm out here.
No doubt. And so your last particular trip, you know, you do with your sister every year, your twin.
Yes.
Tell the people about that.
Well, I have a twin sister. Her name is Danny. And she's awesome. We're fraternal. We're best friends. And we take trips every year. So a couple years ago, we went to Italy. Last year, we went to Burning Man. And this year, we went to Arizona. And when she said, let's go to Phoenix, I'm like, ew, why? And she's like, it's fun, trust me. I'm like, no. But then I'm like, oh, wait a minute. We can go to, where is it that Michaela Angela Davis lives?
Mm-mm.
It's Sedona. And I was like, ooh, nature, okay.
Sedona.
So I was like, can we go to Sedona? She's like, yeah. I was like, bet.
They say Arizona's like home of all the spas and...
Yo, it is so beautiful. Like, I want to go back really bad. We wound up not making it to Sedona because we were having too much fun.
Right.
But we did hike Camelback Mountain. It was like 105 degrees outside. We didn't die, obviously, so I was proud of that.
And how is it to hike in 105 degrees?
It wasn't that bad. You know why? Because it's not humid. Like, New York, 105 is different than a desert 105. Like, that's just pure sun. And there was some shading by the mountain, you know what I mean?
Okay.
But we just walked slow, and we had a lot of water.
That's what's up.
Cool. It was pretty dope. You know, it's like nothing like, you know, going outside of your comfort zone and looking at different things. So.
No doubt. All right, so let's take it back. So Tony Ty is a director, like I said. I worked on a few projects with her.
Mm-hmm.
We did Potty Break together, which is her creation, and I was on the executive producer kind of thing.
Executive producer and DP, and you killed it.
Rare it up. And so we got Potty Break. That's on TV One's streaming platform called...
Yeah. Up Space for Creators.
All right, now. So you could check that out. And then...
we have a tour right now, actually, as you know.
We have a tour.
Yeah, it started last week.
Yeah, we do.
You didn't make it, too, because of your meeting.
That sounded like a one-off to me. I didn't know it was a tour.
It's a 10-city tour.
You see how they do?
They just did DC yesterday. We're only on the New York and L.A. tour. Leg of the tour.
See how they do the suits? They be out there on their marketing promo, lead the suits home. Okay. Word up.
But yeah, so we talked about, it was hosted by Tina Lifford from Queen Sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And she talked a lot about like her journey. It was about intentionality in your work and creating with a purpose and with intention. So it was really great. It was great.
Okay, what was the highlight?
For me, the highlight was this woman who, so I talked about colorism because, you know, there's a couple episodes in Potty Break where we talk about colorism.
Mm-hmm.
And Donna, who is my co-star, who's British, who's amazing.
And what's colorism?
Colorism is, you know, the complexion issue within the black community, right?
Okay, light-skinned, dark-skinned, red, yellow.
Yeah, and that whole comparison thing and the... You know, the trauma and troubles that comes along with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I was talking to the audience about what my intentions are behind, like my purpose with my filmmaking is to show, one is when it comes to African-American women, just to show us in a more diverse light because we have so many different layers.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's fully represented in the media. And then also just portraying darker-skinned women and... in a light that's different than in the way that I saw in blaxploitation movies that my mother made me watch when I was little. Mm-hmm. So the love interests were always like brown skin and dark skin. So right. It was weird that it shifted.
Right.
And then, all of this stuff is intentional.
Right.
You know, so we talked some about that. So it was this older woman.
So why was that important, being you a light-skinned woman?
I am caramel, but it's important.
Well, I'm from, you red.
I'm in denial, no. It's important to me because I told the audience this story a few years back. Rain Pryor, Richard Pryor's daughter, did a one-woman show at the National Black Theater in Harlem. And it was called Fried Chicken and Latkes, about her being half black and half Jewish and her struggles in that. Mm-hmm. And there was a darker-skinned black woman in the audience, really beautiful woman. And she stood up and she, you know, they have a talk back after the show. And she looked at Rain Pryor. She's like, you know, I have a hard time identifying with your struggle and feeling sorry for you because you're light-skinned and you have curly hair and you have the look that guys like. So I don't even understand, like, why I should care about your struggle. And everyone in the audience was like a hush, and you could see like Rain Pryor looked like the wind was kicked out of her.
Right.
You know, because her whole life, you know, she's not black enough to be black, not white enough to be white, and mm-hmm. then she's too light for black people to care. It's just this weird shit, right? Can I curse?
Yeah, I curse more than anybody.
Oh, shit. All right. So anyway, the woman said that she couldn't really respond. She was stunned. So I'm like, hey, can I respond to that? And I told the woman, I was like, your story is valid. And so is hers. We cannot discredit each other's pain. And I'm like, we live in New York City. There's all these playwriting groups and, theater groups and writing colonies, meetups, where you can develop your own story. Because she was saying how she's a teacher and she teaches third grade.
Mm-hmm.
And the little boys in the class will pass around papers rating the girls based on how beautiful they were.
Right.
And the light-skinned and Latina girls would always be on the top of the list. And she said it was the same exact thing when she was in third grade.
Right.
And these kids don't feel beautiful, and she doesn't feel beautiful. And I could see the pain in her eyes. And it really, like, I don't want to start crying now. Every time I think about it, it just, mm-hmm. like, really fucks me up. Because I tried to find her after, and I couldn't find her.
Mm-hmm.
But it stayed with me. Like, there's not a lot of days when I'm thinking about, like, representation in my work that I don't think about her. Mm-hmm. So the short film I just shot in L.A. in May, that also, like, my lead is, like, a chocolate woman.
Where?
So funny enough, so it was this woman who was like in her 50s. She comes up to me afterwards and she's like, you know, I didn't like you when I first saw you. And
yo,
like,
red bitch.
I was like, whoa, okay. And my sister, she's like, why? Because of how she looks. And the woman's like, yes, I got to keep it real. I got to keep it real. She's like, I just looked at you and thought you were one of those girls. But you know something? I was wrong and I apologize. You're amazing. And this was what struck me. She was like, you've inspired me to write, and I've never written in my life. But mm-hmm. now I want to write and tell my story, so thank you. So I gave her my email. I'm like, listen, send me your stuff, you know mm-hmm. what I mean, and I'll read it for you. But funny enough, I was told by a really good Nigerian friend of mine that I shouldn't talk about that because it's kind of like I look like a white person talking mm-hmm. about the struggles of black people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what?
Well,
and I kind of got what he was saying.
No, I feel you on that, but it flips both ways, you know, depending on where you at. You know what I'm saying? What environment you in and the values of that environment. So if you were in Miami,
mm-hmm.
black, dark-skinned women, you know what I'm saying, top of the food chain for the most part. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? Dark-skinned dudes definitely on top of the food chain and always been. You know what I'm saying? Even during the height of, you know what I'm saying?
And dark-skinned women?
The DeBarge era. Yo, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Because it don't even feel like there's a lot of light-skinned people in Miami. Mm. That's how I feel. Like, when I tell people I'm from Miami, they're like, where are you from Miami? Like, you know what really? I mean? So when people identify with where I'm from, they identify with darker-skinned people.
Caribbean, Haitian,
you know what I'm
Jamaican.
Saying? No, just even just black Americans. You know
right.
what I'm saying?
Okay.
But you do have Caribbeans. But I'm saying, like, even in the black neighborhoods,
mm-hmm.
you know, they tend to identify, lean more darker.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? There are red girls. Mm-hmm. There are. But, you know what I'm saying? That's how they, you know, they're all red. You know what I mean? They are light-skinned dudes, of course, like me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not that light, so, you know what I'm saying? Nah, I'm not DeBarge.
You're the same color and you call me Redbone.
I'm a little darker than you.
Okay.
But where I'm from, I might as well be white. You know what I'm saying? Cause you know what I mean, that's how they ostracize you.
Right.
So, I mean, it don't matter who talk. We all black. You know what I'm saying? You might be Like, I'm the lightest person in my immediate family.
I'm the darkest.
You see what I'm saying?
In my whole entire family, cousins, aunts, everybody.
So, you know, it's like they can't tell you what to say and what not. Because in the black community, my dad's brown, my sister's brown. Both of my sisters are brown.
You
know what I'm saying? My wife is dark. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So they can't tell you what you could talk about, what you can't talk about, because it's your experience.
It's my experience. And we got to stop, like, trying to silence people based on their experiences. And Potty Break in episode 3, The Dress, mm-hmm. we talk, you know, Donna and my character talk about that.
Right. When
Donna says, you know, so in Potty Break, even though it's a comedy, we try to, you know, put little social commentary in every episode.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, that's not being lost on the audience.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, tell your story. And you know, most of the time, the people that's telling somebody not to tell their story ain't saying shit. So,
and a lot of people think that's the right way to be, though.
It's okay.
You know, it's just like, you know, a lot of people want to, you know, but I'm like, listen, I'm a rebel. Like, I'm from Harlem. Like, some of my, you know, I have a black, you know, one of my mentors was a Black Panther. Like, I'm out here. I'm not scared.
Motherfucker from Harlem, boy. Quick to tell you, I'm from Harlem. I'm from Harlem. Okay.
Yeah.
Word up.
Well, I mean, let's face the fact. It's the epicenter of black culture. So we don't have any kind of,
yeah,
it's a privilege. It is a privilege.
For a while, for a long time, it was.
No, it's still, well, you're right. I see what you're getting at.
You know what I'm saying? There are epicenters popping up. You know what I'm saying? And I believe, you know, a lot of places that culture is coming out of faster than others. Right now, I think Chicago is putting out a whole lot of culture. And they doing stuff in different ways that no other city is doing. Nobody's putting out as many visual artists, black visual artists.
That's very true.
At a high level. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, they're doing a lot of stuff. And it's you know, they've been a stepchild to Harlem and other places in New York and cities like that for a long time.
Detroit.
But I think at this present moment, me looking from the outside, looking in with no vested interest in any of it.
Right.
I see, every time I see something that pops up, it's like, oh, shit, that shit be from Chicago.
Chicago, that's true. That's very true.
Or they doing some shit in Chicago. Like, they do some shit in the summer in Chicago where it's a boat party on the lake. And it's all black people in their boats.
Really?
Lined up. And it's a big party in the lake, not on the sand. In the lake. In the water.
Can I sidebar with that?
Go ahead.
Have you ever been to PG County in Maryland?
I have not.
I was there over the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And that shit is Wakanda.
No doubt.
And
I've heard that.
I did not know about this. My friend had been telling me about it. I'm like, PG County, what are you talking about? Whatever. I go out there, and one Sunday we go to brunch. They're like, oh, we're going to the country club. Oh, you probably shouldn't wear that. You have to wear it. I'm like, oh, okay. We get there. I'm seeing, like, it's in this gated community. It's all these black people driving around in golf carts. I'm like, what the fuck? I see all these black people getting out of Jaguars and stuff. We go in the country club. It's all black people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, what is this? I'm like, where are we? This is what, I'm like, you didn't tell, nobody told us about this.
Yeah.
They're like, this county is the richest black county in America. And I'm like, and they was like, and we don't want everyone to know. And I'm like, that is so selfish.
Well, you know, that's how rich people do.
Man, but I was just like, wow, they just gave me a whole new, so I'll talk about Harlem. Then I was humbled by PG County.
Yeah, but that's just one thing, having money and putting the gate around it. It's another thing in producing culture. And putting things out in the world, what people are experiencing, and it's bettering culture on a whole, other than just, you know what I'm saying, your particular group.
Well, yes, I see what you mean, but just the idea of being able to grow up in a community seeing that black wealth is attainable.
Like, no doubt. That's cool, too.
I grew up
in
Harlem.
That's an addition.
I grew up with black poverty, but we had a wealth of culture,
no
style,
doubt. No
you know
doubt.
What I mean, music, swag. You know what I mean? And I think in that county, you just see like, oh, I could, you know, be a government contractor.
I think it's a lot of that in Chicago and Atlanta.
Now.
It's like, no, even back in the day.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Back in the day, like, you know what I'm saying? It's a guy, his family still making money. He was like the first, he was in slavery. He was selling like the beat up produce that, you know what I'm saying, his owner, you know, couldn't sell. So he would take it out and he was able to sell it. And he made money.
Okay.
And to this day, his family is the people who supply, I guess, lettuce and tomatoes to McDonald's. You know what I'm saying? So, Dave, it's been a lot of wealth in Chicago for a long time. There's been wealth in Atlanta.
You know name one person in Chicago.
I mean, goddamn, I don't have an encyclopedia with me. Shit, now. Nah. I'm just trying to tell you that PG County ain't the only place. You know what I'm saying? Shit. Fucking with me. But anyway.
You better have your receipt.
I mean, you know what I'm saying? I had a receipt. Now, leave me alone. Forgotten what I was about to say and shit.
You was about to say Atlanta, too.
Like Atlanta, wow. Definitely. You know what I'm saying? Atlanta had their own millionaires back in the day. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, like for instance, my wife, she's grown up seeing, you know, black people doing good. First time I went to Atlanta, it was the first Wakanda I knew. Also when it was Hotlanta. Mm-hmm. And shit. That's the first time you really seen just black people working anywhere, like everywhere. Like anywhere you go, it's like black people working. You know what I'm saying? You go to the airport, black people working all through that bitch. You know what I'm saying? You don't go to no other airport and black people were just working there, because when they was building the airport, H.J. Russell, a black man, had the contract to build and had built the concessions and all that. So therefore, you got black restaurants and
that's,
you know
vendors,
what I mean?
Yeah.
Black vendors and shit like that. So it's like, that's why even the legacy of that, you got 4040 in there. You got Luda's restaurant inside of the airport. So it's been a legacy of, like, Pascal's was in there, of black restaurants and black businesses inside of the airport in Atlanta.
Wow.
Which is the busiest airport in America.
Is it?
Yes.
Whoa.
So.
It's really big.
Yeah. So, you know what I'm saying? There are places that are doing it. PG County has their gate. In their golf carts and stuff, and that's good.
Well, no, it was just that one. No,
I know,
no.
I'm just fucking around. I got good friends from PG County.
Club we went to. It's
good,
a huge county.
I got
everybody
friends.
Everybody ain't
PG.
Rich in PG County.
I know, I got. Yeah. I'm just saying. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But Potty Break, tell them what Potty Break is.
Potty Break is so I, as you stated in the beginning, I used to model. Mm-hmm. And I used to get invited to a lot of parties. And some of those was one promoter, was this promoter group called, what was the name, Black Diamonds.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Derek
when
Corley.
I moved to New York, they was popping.
They was it. So he used to pay me to come to the club every week with my friends. And I was, it was like a lot of promoters would be like, oh, you know, come to my party. And they'd be like, you know, come and bring your girls, no dudes. I'm like, okay. Then one day it hit me like, wait a minute. I was like, you're like fucking duping me. I'm like, you're pimping me.
Right.
And I'm like, if you want me to come, you got to pay my cab fare.
Mm-hmm.
And then that escalated to, and you buying my drinks.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I started working with Derek Corley, I was like, I mean, it wasn't a lot of money. I was in college, but, you know, mm-hmm. I was popping because I was modeling for Baby Fat and I was rolling around Russell Simmons and all these people. So I had some leverage. So, you know, I was just like, well, you know, he would pay me, get me a table and get me bottles.
No doubt.
And then when I was kind of like a pimp, because it was a shortage of girls, like at my table, I would just go outside of VIP and I don't want to say the bougie term, but anyway.
Just say the shit now. My people, they understand.
We used to call it gin pop.
Okay.
It's horrible.
You go out and gin pop, just general population, and get some general population girls
some pretty girls
to populate the VIP.
To come populate VIP.
You gave them an upgrade.
We were just eye candy.
That's like getting an upgrade at the American Airlines.
At the airport, right, exactly, right?
You know what I'm saying?
Like, oh, you're cute.
Plop your ass out of coach.
Right, and be like, you want to come stairs and drink for free? And, you know, they just, first they would be a little hesitant, but then they would be like, oh, well, she doesn't look weird and creepy. Actually, some of those girls I'm actually still really good friends with, oddly enough.
No doubt.
But
So you out there, you out there in the clubs, you at the VIP tables, you got the bottles and shit, and you turned this into a story.
Right. You know, I was just like, okay, I want to do a story about just, you know, I like the idea of mumblecore.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I like dialogue. I like conversation, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of a lost art form.
Well, that's what we are. We are in the conversation.
Exactly.
We are mumblecore podcast.
Mumblecore. We mumbling. That's out here.
But not to be confused with mumble rap.
No.
You know what I mean?
Mumblecore.
Go look it up. Go look it up. Yeah, get your encyclopedias out.
Wikipedia.
Hit your Google box.
Yeah, so all those movies, right, these are feature films with just people talking and sometimes in one room, you know what I mean?
Right.
So I'm like, all right, let's do something like that, but put it, you know, do it, you know, combine it with something that I know, which is at that club environment. You know, I wanted it to kind of have a fashion feel to it, so that's why we had, like, you know, some nice clothes, even though, you know, we shot all of that in such a short amount of time.
Right.
You know, it was just, I think I was being very ambitious, but, but I think, you know, so we didn't really get to really highlight some of the wardrobe the way I thought I would,
right.
But I love the way it came out. I think it was perfect. Cause initially we had a team that was trying to shoot it like it was going to be on network television. And I'm like, yeah, we don't want it to look that sharp and crisp. Like, I don't want to be judged on that level.
Right.
You know what I mean? I kind of was thinking of Money and Violence,
right?
So which had a terrible production value, but the writing was so good it didn't matter, and you right. couldn't just stop watching it. So, you know, and then you came in and you shot it
So you're saying you came to the gutter to get some exactly. raggedy looking shit?
I was like,
Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying I wanted it to
I don't
look...
know whether to be. I'm saying. No, is this a compliment?
Was... Or... No.
Shit. Am I being insulted here?
He tried to shoot it with an overhead light, and the other actress was dark skinned, and he's trying to blow it out to make her look lighter. And I was like, right. I don't want that.
Right.
I want it to look authentic. I want it to look like, not like a music video, but like a documentary.
Right, okay.
Not like...
You want it to look authentic.
I wanted it to look authentic, like a music video / documentary.
Word up.
Which is the world I came from.
Mm-hmm.
Real. I did not want it to look like it was being shot. You know, I fucking hate club scenes on TV shows. They always look stupid and terrible. You know what I'm talking about? Like on TV shows?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I got my own beef with that.
I hate them.
Because they never dancing... at the right pace.
No.
The music don't ever match. They don't ever clap on the right beat.
Right.
I was a music supervisor, so that was my pet peeve of any movies with music. But it's a reason why that happens. You know what I'm saying?
Because they clear the music after.
You clear the music after. And it's a way to put the dancing and the clapping to a certain BPM.
That's what I was about to say. Like, but I want it. Right.
They have that. They have thump tracks is what they call them. And you play it and they dance to a certain beat, but then it all boils down to the music editor. And when the music editor puts the music to the film, you have to have somebody that really understands.
He needs some rhythm.
Yeah, he needs to know that the clap goes on the two, not the one. You know what I'm saying?
Right. So you come from kind of a music background.
Yeah, I come from a music background.
But also you worked in like magazines. Like
I worked in magazines. I made songs. I produced.
Right, exactly. So you understand rhythm.
I was a rapper per se.
I know. So you understand rhythm.
Right.
But
I'm black.
Yes. So this other guy, right, mm-hmm. was, you know, he was not of our people.
Yeah, of course. No doubt.
So, I just wanted it to have that authenticity, and I just couldn't believe, like, you know, the way it came out. It was, like, everything that I wanted.
Right.
And it was perfect, you know, and it was fun. Like, everyone was like, how was that, shooting everything in one room? I'm like,
well, first of all, that was
the fun part.
Well, first, you got to let them know. Okay, so Potty Break is a show that's basically based in the bathroom of the club.
Right, every episode.
In each episode... You know, the main characters enter the bathroom and the show takes place there. You have a couple of appearances and people pop in and out, you know what I'm saying, randomly sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what it is. So it's women in the women's bathroom.
Yeah.
And
we do what we do in the bathroom. We talk shit. We fart.
Oh, shit.
We use the bathroom.
It's terrible. Being the only guy on the set for the most part besides... Robert Glasper shot one episode, so he was there for one episode. But for the rest of that shit, it was just me. It's very intimidating.
I didn't realize that, but it's right.
Being in a women's bathroom or shooting women's shit in the bathroom. Not shit, but you know what I'm saying? Shooting women's stuff in the bathroom and hearing women talk and what they talk about in the bathroom. The shit is... You know, I would have rather not.
Oh, like the menstrual cup conversation?
I mean, all that. You know
Santana.
What I'm saying? We supposed to be in the club. Like, no one hear all that.
But that's what we really talk about in the bathroom.
Of course. That's what y'all talk about in y'all bathroom.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So.
But, I mean, I think, you know, it's funny. When I watch Potty Break, I actually like watching it, like, as an audience member.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't see myself on screen.
Okay.
I just see, I don't know, there's a disconnect.
Right.
But I just enjoy watching these two girls. It's weird. I can't really explain it, but it's fun. It's kind of like what I wanted to see.
Right.
So I just did what I wanted to watch.
So, you know, I think that it was pioneering in the fact that, you know, it takes you places where you don't necessarily get to go.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And that's, I guess that's what this whole era is all about. This, you know what I'm saying? Because, like, if you look at, like, Instagram, right? And the shit you see on Instagram, like, you might see somebody on their story, they in their room, getting ready for the club, or whatever. They might be going to bed and telling some story. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, you know how much rapping you had to do to be able to see somebody in their room getting ready for bed? You know what I'm saying? You had to go through a whole scenario. You had to lay your whole Mac down. Mm-hmm. Meet somebody, talk to them, get to the house. You know what I'm saying? It's like now, it's shit just, everybody just everywhere doing what they do.
But it kind of like desensitizes people. It's even like, even with dating, like I feel like people are not even like, it's so weird. I feel like everyone's just numb and, like, disconnected.
Yeah.
Like, people don't even try to get to know each other.
You get everything for free now.
Yeah, everything is just, like, sex.
You know what I'm saying? Because it's like, all right, we done got through all of, I know who you are. I know what you talk about.
I know what your mama look like. I know your uncle died last
I done seen you in your drawers.
Right.
You know how much it had to take to get a picture of somebody in their drawers?
Right.
On the motherfucking Kodak. Got down, take it to the Eckerd's to get developed. You know what I'm saying? Shit.
You didn't want the man developing the photos.
Exactly.
To see you naked.
So exactly. Really, so it's like that. It's like, you know what I'm saying? It used to take a lot of work.
I mean, not that I was around then, that's what I heard.
Shut the whatever. Any old way.
I'm millennial ish.
Exactly. Whatever. Millennial by heart.
No, I actually am on the tail end.
Okay, whatever.
I'll tell
you was modeling for Fat Farm.
Baby fat.
Baby fat.
Baby fat. Same. But
thing.
I was a teenager.
Okay.
20 years ago.
Kimora was too.
Yeah. Kimora's older than me. I love Kimora though.
Yeah, Kimora's dope.
A lot of who I am is because of her.
Kimora.
She got, yo, that's, she's a mother.
She
I can curse, right? She's a mother.
She don't get
beast.
As much credit as she deserves.
Yeah.
Because she came in this thing, and you know what I'm saying? People give Russell a lot of credit, but you know what I'm saying? She was the flavor. You know what I'm saying?
And he used to say that.
She was the look. And then...
And the personality and the attitude.
And then in the end...
And she's hood because she's from St. Louis, but she had that sophistication because
right.
She was in Paris from when she was 14 modeling for Chanel.
And in the end, she knew how to take all that shit and really make it work. You know what I'm saying?
She's
and
amazing.
She made it work. You know what I'm saying? Like... She ended up running the company.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And then, you know, and I had this little one, you know what I'm saying? I had this one little trip. And people on the podcast, they know about this trip. I went to St. Bart one time, right? And Kimora, like, when you out there, everybody is, you know, you got the richest people in the world out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And everybody holding their own and got their own thing. And Kimora, this particular year, she... She stayed on the yacht. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And her shit was the biggest yacht of all the yachts in the harbor. You know what I'm saying? And it's just a statement to say, you know what I'm saying? I'm up in this bitch.
I'm out
Don't
here.
You forget.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Who the fuck I am.
She
you
helped make saying? That shit hot.
I mean, it's all of that. You know what I mean? It's like you got the flavor, but you also know how to present that shit and how to stun on a motherfucker. And these motherfuckers got all the shit. You know what I'm saying? They got all the shit they could ever want.
Mm-hmm.
But you still come through that bitch and be like, oh, Kimora has the biggest boat. And that's the talk of the town.
Really?
You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, Kimora's boat.
It's funny. I dated this guy years ago, and he was really well off. I mean, he had, like, he lent some of his artwork to, like, the Met or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we were in the Hamptons once, and we were on some boats. And it was kind of gross because the guy had, like, Louis Vuitton leather in the bathroom walls. And I was like,
why is that gross?
I mean, it was just kind of weird.
Like, starting on these bitches, what's happening?
I mean, you know, okay.
You know what I'm saying?
That's,
you act like you ain't from Harlem.
I am.
You from where Dapper
right,
Dan
Dapper,
from?
I know, that's so funny. I've been
hell?
Knowing Dapper Dan
you know
since
saying?
I was a little girl.
Exactly. So what you mean you don't know what is disgusting? You
but
know
it
what it
just
is?
Like, it was just very, like, it was kind of uncomfortable on the boat because it was so much excess of stuff like
right.
that you mm-hmm. couldn't relax. If you can get my
you
drift.
You could relax.
Right. Okay, whatever. You're right.
See, you got to, as D Lemon would say, you have to exorcise the broke out yourself. You know what I'm saying? Okay. You had to get the broke out you. You know what I'm saying? So you can relax.
It was just, it didn't feel like a fun thing.
Right,
it was
right.
Everyone was.
Celebration of riches.
It wasn't even a celebration of riches. It felt like no one could really be themselves. You know?
Until somebody come and be themselves, and then they take over.
Right.
See, that's how it go.
Right. So anyway, so we leave the boat. We had fun. It was great. You know, we were taking pictures. It was fun. Eventually, and then the next morning, my ex and his friend were just like, ah, they were just like so angry and like hating on this guy about this boat must be worth this amount of money and da da da. And I'm looking like, what?
That's when you can't buy that boat.
And I was just like, yo, like you got what so many people would kill for and you still not satisfied that you hating on this other dude. When does it stop?
But see, it don't. That's the whole thing. And Dame Dash said it one time. He was like,
why are we talking about him?
Because he had a point.
Ew.
That fits this conversation. And Dame said, you know what I'm saying? No matter how rich you get, there's always a guy with a bigger boat.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And
literally.
So it doesn't, you know what I'm saying? It doesn't stop. You know what I'm saying? So at some point, you just have to be happy.
Right.
Where you at.
Right.
Because it's going to be a guy that's going to build a boat bigger than yours and better than yours.
A Louis Vuitton bathroom.
Right. Because boats ain't cheap.
No.
You know what I'm saying? So when Kodak Black said, let me drive the boat, you know what I'm saying? It's a testament to shit. Everybody can't get a motherfucking boat.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And then when you get a boat, you can't get the big boat. Or you can't get the biggest boat. You know what I'm saying?
Why you got to put that voice on?
Because that's how you got to let a nigga know. That's when you let a nigga know something.
You just turn into Fred Sanford.
You know what I'm saying? That's how you got to let a nigga know. Shit, there's a boat that you ain't going to be able to buy.
But you can't have every boat.
You know what I'm saying? There's a big boat that you can't buy.
You got the old Negro spiritual voice.
Exactly. That's when you had to break a motherfucker down to their primal instincts. You know what I'm saying? Remember, you was a slave once.
Right. Right. And remembering that should humble your ass.
Yeah. So shut the fuck up and ride the boat.
Right.
And pop you some champagne wherever the fuck you at in the Hamptons.
Listen, as long as you healthy, that's the wealthiest thing. That's the wealthiest wealthy.
That's what they say. Until you try to buy a boat. Hey, man, I got all this health, man. I'm looking for, I'm trying to get that motherfucking 300 footer. Shit.
Your old Negro spiritual voice just made me think of something.
What's that?
Last night, Who Killed Malcolm X premiered on this new network called Fusion. Did you see it?
No, I don't even know about Fusion. What's Fusion?
It's some new network. I can't tell you much about it. I just saw it. But it's going to be on Netflix starting in January.
Who Killed Malcolm X?
Well,
did you watch
I don't
it?
Want to get killed, but you could Google Mos 25.
I thought they already know who the guy was.
So it was one guy was really one of the shooters that they shot in the leg that was trying to run out of Audubon Ballroom. And then it was two other guys that got convicted.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys were from a mosque in Harlem, had nothing to do with it. One guy is in the documentary. He was also at the screening at the Schomburg the other day.
Mm-hmm.
He's 82 years old, looks really young, but he did 20 years. Both of them did 20 years.
Jail be preserving people. When you come home from jail with that good skin, I don't know what the fuck is happening.
Well, he got a master's degree. He was teaching. He was chilling. People in there knew he didn't do it, so he didn't really get, luckily, right? He didn't get, it was hard, obviously, but he was like, he didn't really get fucked with because people knew that it was a setup.
Right.
So the actual killers came from Mos 25 outside of Newark, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
So you can Google who ran that. Actually, it's kind of out. I don't know. I wasn't there, but I know one of Malcolm X's daughters was an assassination plot against this person who used to run Mos 25.
Who is this person?
He's very popular. He out
just
here.
Just say it.
I'm not saying his name.
I'm finna Google the shit.
Yeah, Google
he
that.
Run it now?
He used to. Just Google Mos 25.
All right, now. Go ahead, continue.
But that person had apologized afterwards. He actually testified on behalf of Malcolm X's daughter, so she didn't have to do time. She did probation.
Mm-hmm.
But he was saying that he's sorry if he said anything that led to the death of Malcolm X.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of these guys.
Oh, Louis Farrakhan?
I mean, you know.
Oh, you ain't saying it. So they signed Louis Farrakhan. I mean, I heard that before.
I mean, you gotta. They don't say that it's six parts. Only the first one came out yesterday. But I kind of just will start Googling and investigating everything, and I was just like, oh my God.
Yeah, you know.
But it's a good series. I mean, you can come away from it with your own opinion. I mean, I only saw one episode, but you know, and like a trailer. But yeah, I think everyone should watch that.
Okay.
You're an asshole.
No, I'm for real. I'm like, okay, you with the little bit of information. Got me over here on the Google box. Now they gonna be coming after me and shit. They already, man, Paracon them already know me, man.
They
know
do? Me.
Yeah,
they because you Muslim.
Nah.
But you're not Nation of Islam Muslim.
No, I'm not.
Muslim.
But they know me.
You Mecca Muslim.
Word. And it's all good.
Yes.
We out here.
If we had another hour, I would want to ask you some more questions.
Ask me a question. What you got? We got time. Well, we only halfway through.
Oh, okay. Just about, well, I think a lot about like Christianity.
Uh-huh.
And the fact that before we came to this country, our people, we weren't practicing Christianity.
No doubt.
I rock with it because I don't have no reason not to. And honestly, I mean, it's whatever, but I just think about why a lot of black people in the 60s and 70s converted to Islam.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to know why your family, your dad did.
I don't know why. I wasn't there. But I was.
But he didn't grow up Muslim.
Nah, we from the slaves.
Right.
We off the boat. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like most of everybody else. Now, my pops, you know what I'm saying? He felt like, you know, he grew up in Cleveland. And then he went to the Vietnams.
Ooh.
You know what I'm saying? He lied about his age so he could go to the Navy and go to the Vietnam. So I guess he left when he was about 16.
Wow.
Because, you know, it was impoverished in Cleveland. And, you know, he made his way. He came, you know, he got through. He made it back. You know, my grandma had moved to Miami at the time. And he came to visit her, and he thought it was a cool place to be. Mm-hmm. And so he set up shop. But, you know what I'm saying, you know, you start growing up, you're in your 20s and shit, and you start thinking, damn, I'm walking around with this name, you know what I'm saying, from, you know, a father that ain't give a fuck about me, you know what I'm saying, that went on by his own way, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, I'm walking around with his name. Then his name came from a motherfucker who had us enslaved and shit. You know what I'm saying? This movement is going on. You know, it's black power this, black power that. It's happening in the 60s and shit. So you looking at it like, okay, you start reading and start getting information and you start disassociating yourself with what's not really connected to you. You know what I mean? So why am I holding on to a past that wasn't really for me? You know what I'm saying? Mm. Why don't I create a future of my own making?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And that's how he would break it down to us. You know what I'm saying? This is something we're starting fresh. Because we the only Muslims in our whole core. You know what I'm saying? Everybody Christian.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's a show on In the Conversation. You go back to look up Go Against Your Grandma. That's the episode.
Go Against Your Grandma.
Go Against Your Grandma episode where, you know, I had to tell my grandma, we don't eat pork. And she like, well, I made pork chops, motherfucker. And I'm like, well, I guess we won't eat.
And she's like, I guess you're gonna starve.
And then you know, we had a stare off, like the Puff Daddy, the stare off meme. We was looking at the other dude.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, I don't know why your mom and them did this to you. They grew up on pork. And then she made us something different. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
So I'm representing me and my little sister, and you know what I'm saying? That's a hard position to be in as a kid, to go against your grandma. You know what I'm saying? Like, she's the ultimate authority figure above your parents. You know
that
what I'm saying?
Sounds like a short film.
You know what I'm saying? It's above. She above everybody. Like, you know what I'm saying? And then on top of that, you got like 13 kids, you know what I'm saying? Aunts, uncles, cousins sitting there looking at you do this. And you got to, you know what I'm saying, do this shit in front of everybody. And that's
well, that was a great act of love on her part to even, like, kind of, like,
break down
to it, yeah. And
I mean, she didn't. I think she really respected that shit in the end.
Right, obviously,
you know what I'm saying?
She could have been. That's why I was like, oh, well, you gonna starve? You know, that's what my mother would have said.
Right, and then I was like, okay.
Right.
But I think in the end, she really respected that shit.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I don't know. I can't prove
it. And it's truth to it. That's funny. So in the documentary in the first part with Malcolm X, they showed a clip of an interview he did on some white news program, and they were just like, well, what's your last name? He's like, I just told you it's X. He's like, well, clearly that's not the name you were born with. And they were like, and then he was just breaking it down, and they were just like really trying to like push him, and he was just like, he broke that shit down so crazy.
Right, so... You know what I'm saying? In that time, you had, you know, this move. It felt exciting. You know what I'm saying? It felt like, yeah, we might be able to do something.
Like you could reclaim something.
Yeah, you could reclaim something. Because it was more than just about the name. It's
and
about
have an attachment to something.
Right. It was about, you know, your neighborhoods, your communities being self-sustainable, growing food, eating to live. All the shit what people doing now, like Whole Foods and all this health eating shit, mm-hmm. is what they was doing in the 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, even down to the hemp and, you know what I'm saying, shit like that. Like growing herbs. Like my mom used to grow bean sprouts under the counter. You know
wow,
what I'm saying?
Really?
So it was a whole nother thing of being in tune with nature, mm-hmm. the way you feed yourself and how you relate to each other, mm-hmm. and how you take care of each other instead of depending on the motherfuckers who don't really care about you. You know what I'm saying? Depending on, you know what I'm saying, the community at large to right. take care of your community. Mm-hmm. That ain't really how it should be.
So funny you should say that. I wound up in my inbox today. I got an article from History.com, you know, the History Channel,
mm-hmm.
On their blog or whatever. They had an article that came out today, obviously. I was really shocked. It talked about how the Black Panther Party, how, you know, they were a threat to the American government,
mm-hmm.
but how their breakfast program
right.
is what's, it seems to be what started the country off with giving free breakfasts yeah. to kids.
Free lunch and breakfast.
The free breakfast program, which started the year after the Black Panther Party started.
No doubt.
And it talked about all the horrible thing. When J. Edgar Hoover kind of gave American cities and police departments like free reign to kind of terrorize the Black Panther Party,
mm-hmm.
Some of the things that they did. But the teachers would comment how the kids would come in and not be like crying and having hunger pains and
right.
falling because asleep at their desk because they were eating. So they actually,
it's a real thing, you know what I'm saying? And those are the types of things that they were talking about. Like you go, like when you go to the masjid on Sunday and you know what I mean? It wasn't just a whole lot of.
On Sunday?
Yeah, you went on Sunday. You go Friday for Juma.
Yeah, Sunday, I went to one of those. Before.
Sunday for the regular service.
I know.
And, a lot of the conversation is more about taking care of yourself.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? That's the conversation you hear. Like, you know, how to, it's like what Nipsey talking about. It's mm-hmm. what they was talking about. You know what I'm saying? So that's
wow.
the same type of conversation.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, build something in your own community. Mm-hmm. Like, what Nipsey was doing, Brother Rasul was doing in Mop City, in Liberty City. You know what I'm saying? But it's a little section called Mop City right on 7th Ave, mm-hmm. where Rasul was running that program. Mm-hmm. Then Rasul's is still there.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? That's where you could go buy your Bally's and, you know what I'm saying, your linen set mm-hmm. or whatever. Like, you know what I'm saying, your hood fashions.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? That was Brother Rasul, but he owned the plaza. You know what I mean? And that was the format that they was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the format, you know, I grew up under. So all of that kind of conversation probably was appealing to a guy who came from poverty. You know what I'm saying? Trying to figure out who he is, been to Vietnam, fought a war, came back, and you know what I'm saying? You're trying to put it all together.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And I think once he started to realize, okay, how he wanted to move, he said he, you know, outside of the religion, I think before the religion part, he found this book called As a Man Thinketh.
Mm-hmm.
And
I have that book.
And he would read it.
James Allen.
Yeah, he would read that at his little job.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
It's a really thin book. Really
it's really thin,
read,
but
yeah.
it's deep mm-hmm. and it's dense in information.
Mm-hmm.
So he read that book and really started to try to put his thoughts together on how he wanted to make it happen.
Wow, okay.
And that's how all that came about.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Since, you know. It's now your podcast, you're asking the questions. what else you got?
Well, since you brought up, since we're talking about Miami,
mm-hmm.
we might as well talk about the Super Bowl.
Super Bowl in Miami. Now, Super Bowl in Miami is interesting. because Super Bowl in Miami changed the way I thought about a lot of things. Right before I moved to New York, it was a Super Bowl in Miami. Mm-hmm. But it was one right before that, like 94 maybe. Mm-hmm. I came here in 99, so it was one like 94 maybe, 99. So you could look it up and see the real dates. But in the 90, the earlier one, it was a thing where, you know, you had a rampant, you know, it was drugs in Miami. It's Miami. You know what I'm saying? You had, you know.
Scarface, duh. We saw the movie.
I mean, beyond Scarface, you have black drug dealers. You know what I mean?
I'm just talking about drugs. Okay.
I mean, 15th Ave. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You know, convertible
about.
Bird, Silky
All
Slim.
All I know about is my
muscle
namesake.
Head. You know what I mean? I mean, it's plenty of people.
My namesake, Tony Montana.
No doubt.
As you were.
So, you know, 15th Ave was the main drug supermarket for all my life. When I was born, 15th Ave was, you know, you ever watched The Wire?
Yeah.
Remember when they had Hamsterdam?
Mm-hmm.
15th Ave was Hamsterdam.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So every block had a different spot. You know, every corner had a different spot. So you might be able to get $5 crack here. You know what I'm saying? This spot only take $20. This spot got the nickel bag weed. This spot got dime bag weed. You know what I'm saying? So every little corner had its own little specialty.
My sister and I used to collect crack bottles when we were younger.
That's not a great fucking thing to do.
We were kids. We didn't know. And one day my mom found
Your
them.
Mom should have been
she
like...
She lost her mind.
What the fuck?
She's like, what the fuck are you doing with these? We're like, mommy, chill. They're like bottles for our dolls.
They're and like Lego.
And I'm like, mommy, I'm green. And my sister and I used to trade. I got blue. I got pink. I got green.
That is wild.
Life is fucked up.
So 15th Ave was that all my life. And then when the Super Bowl was coming, there was a war. There was the Haitians, the Zoes.
I met him before.
I mean, that's not them. It's the whole community.
No, there's a guy named Zoe.
It's a community of Zoes, too.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Okay.
It's a lot of different Zoes.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? But it was a war going on with the Zoes and John Doe's. Who were, you know what I'm saying, some guys from the app. And when the Super Bowl came, it was kind of like the deciding factor. You know what I'm saying? Super Bowl came, and you see what they can do if they want to do it. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So they would come through the Ave and big-ass 18-wheelers with all the whole SWAT teams and the shit with the backup, with the red light and the shit.
Mm-hmm.
And they would ride through slow, let you know that it's going down, and you either leave or they coming back with a jump out. So they did that for probably about 2 weeks and shit and cleaned the whole shit up, put barricades along the blocks, made it one way in, one way out, and shut that whole shit down. When the Super Bowl came, they cleaned the major holes. Mm-hmm. They had the drug spots. They cleaned all of that. The Bab was shut down. 15. They shut all that shit down for the Super Bowl.
How convenient.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? And then the 99 Super Bowl, it was a rough patch in life. You know what I mean?
Sorry,
it was a rough patch.
You gotta explain.
You know what I mean? I was broke. I was trying to figure my way out. You know what I'm saying? I was producing and shit. I produced some records for some dope dealer labels. And then, you know, dope dealers take off for the holidays, you know. They like to buy cars for Christmas, get paint jobs. They're not into spending money on their business. You know what I mean? So, you know what I'm saying? We supposed to be back in the studio. Niggas ain't go back in the studio. Just like, fuck Ali. Because my car got to get out the shop. And I'm buying gifts and I'm buying purses and I'm buying, you know what I'm saying? I'm showing out. So anyway, I was strapped for money. You know what I'm saying? It was Super Bowl. You know what I'm saying? And my people came down and we was hanging out. And they wanted to do some real, they wanted to go to Puffy Party. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
And, you know, I'm like, okay, all right. So we roll. It's about 15 of us. You know what I'm saying? And they from the Midwest. And they all balling. They got all their shit. I got nothing. And so they want to go to Puffy Party. We get to Puffy Party. And
was this BMF?
No, this is before BMF. This is 99. Okay. BMF is later, 2000s. So we get to the Puff Party, and it's an invite-only party. Mm. So it's like, oh, shit. So then we get to the front, and I ended up knowing somebody that was at the door. Like, oh, shit, it was Keisha Walker. Keisha Walker from Insights Marketing right now. Keisha Walker, what's up, Keisha? She's like, oh, shit, what's up? And then she was like, I was like, what's the deal? She was like, how many of y'all? I'm like, it's all us. There's a bunch of
posse.
She was like, well, I can't let all y'all in. Half y'all got to pay. And, you know, them niggas pulling out money from everywhere, like money coming out of socks, and you know what I'm saying? So they just like, oh, shit. So we go in, we have a great time. You know what I'm saying? They have a great time. It's Puffy's right there. Everybody's there. And that same particular thing started to happen everywhere we went that whole weekend. So niggas thought I was a magician. You know what I'm saying? Like, who is this nigga? He was like a little genie in a bottle.
You know what I'm saying?
Rub his head, we gonna get in this shit. So he kind of let me know I had a more power than I thought I had. Okay. You know what I'm saying? But then I moved to New York, and then it was on from there.
Okay.
But that's, you know what I'm saying, that's Super Bowl in Miami is kind of special to me. So now Super Bowl is in Miami this year.
Okay.
And what you want to know about it?
Oh.
You know, I just had to let people know. You know what I'm saying?
I forgot what we brought it up. So today I was reading that your Miami, the king of Miami.
The mayor. Okay.
Luke Skywalker is mad at Jay-Z. And he said
Everybody mad at Jay-Z all the time.
He said Jay-Z's breaking the G code because he coming into his city and he ain't got... I think what he really trying to say is that he should have been the one, like, creative directing the show. But what his mouth is saying is that it should be instead of J-Lo and Shakira, Pitbull should be the headliner because he's from Miami, and he should have Shakira and J-Lo as his guest, and then he should have Flo Rida performing and have Trina and Trick Daddy and other Miami superstars.
If I was Luke, I would think the same way.
Okay.
So I would feel like that. I would feel like that if I was Luke and I was sitting in Miami and I had nothing to lose and I'm just going to say some stuff and I'm going to put the people out who one, I had a hand in raising up, and then two, you know what I'm saying, you know, we're going to represent the city. Yeah, I'm going to say that.
Okay.
However, if I'm Jay-Z and you sitting across the boardroom table, you got your whole team putting together the artists that are going to make the impact on whatever network television, on the biggest network event, advertising network event of all network events, you're going to look at the top level first.
They always do with the Super Bowl.
Exactly. So
there's always been mega stars.
Definitely going to be mega stars.
Not big rap stars, mega stars.
Exactly. So you're going to look at that first. Just like last year, they had Travis Scott. You know what I'm saying?
But he wasn't the headliner.
He was under Maroon 5.
Maroon 5.
Exactly. Right. So, yes, you got to secure the headliner, the shit that's going to make the splash.
But
you know what I'm saying?
Since the beginning of the Super Bowl halftime show, they've never booked the talent based on the city.
Well, they did last year a little bit.
With Atlanta?
Yeah.
Maroon 5's from Atlanta?
No. But they had Big Boy. They had a whole Atlanta segment.
Right, exactly. You know, so they don't even know what they don't who know else what is going to perform
exactly,
yet.
Exactly.
You put in the cart before the horse.
Right.
And it could be a turnoff.
Nah. I mean, motherfuckers, streets are always going to be turning people off. The streets don't care about being a turnoff.
I just feel like with this whole, I don't know, it's this new climate of when people want to jump down Jay-Z's throat. And I'm just like, you don't even know what the full lineup or the full show is yet.
Exactly. So, you know, of course, like I said, if I was Luke, I would feel the same way. Because at one point, not at the Super Bowl per se, Luke did have the clout to say, if you come into Miami, you need to check in.
20 years ago. That's like...
More than that. But, you know what I'm saying?
That's like... Bumpy Johnson, that's old Harlem person try to come
but
out.
But I'm saying, but if all old Harlem person had the Twitters, and they seen what was going on with Jay-Z, and they felt like, well, you know, Jay-Z should check in with the motherfuckers who built this shit. They gonna say that shit. They supposed to say that shit. Everybody gonna throw their little hat in the ring,
right? Okay.
From the top to the bottom.
Fair enough.
Now That ain't got nothing to do with nothing. Right. You know what I'm saying? Pitbull probably got a chance to be
Pitbull
up under.
Pitbull already spoke to J-Lo.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, if J-Lo done reached out to Pitbull or whatever, we don't know.
He's on the
you know what I'm saying? Right. Trick Daddy, you know what I mean? You know, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? If network TV is ready for Trick Daddy. Now, I did have Trick Daddy at the Disney World, which was a stretch. And he performed a clean show, and he did his thing. It was a beautiful moment. Till it wasn't later in the night, but it was a beautiful moment. He performed and it was everything went great. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So I know he could do a clean show, but optically, you know what I'm saying? I'm not gonna book Trick first. On that same show we had Trick, we had Destiny's Child and motherfucking Cameo and, like, you know, people who are more.
Trick Daddy had one of the greatest rap songs of all time.
Which one?
That single that made him famous.
Which one?
I don't remember the name.
He got a lot of songs. You don't know now?
I don't know.
Oh, yeah, I'm a thug. I'm a thug.
Yeah, that was my theme song.
You know that I'm a thug. See.
All day, every day.
You know that I'm a thug.
Wouldn't change for the world.
You know that I'm a thug.
That's right. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
That was my theme song in my mind.
No doubt.
But and I don't think a lot of people knew that song outside of people that was watching Video Music Box.
It's okay. That shit, he was big. But another thing about that 99 Super Bowl, that's when Trick Daddy blew. Mm. Because at that Puff Daddy party, there was a DJ, Flex was there, and it was a DJ also on the side that played the You Don't Know Now with him and Trina.
You don't know now.
And everybody went crazy.
At the party.
They went crazy. Flex is looking like, and it's an interesting thing because I was there. I seen Flex looking like, what the fuck is going on? When I moved to New York a couple months later.
That's
Flex,
a local party after the fucking Super Bowl. I'm talking about televised.
No. This is a sidebar. This is an aside. Just remember how you took me aside on some other shit, on some PG County shit? And this is an aside. You know what I'm saying? Mm. At that party, Flex saw how people responded to the Trick Daddy record and brought that record to New York.
Oh.
When I moved to New York, that Trick Daddy record was playing on Hot 97, and it blew my mind.
Wow.
That was the era when it was just You Don't Know Now, it was the Juvenile High, and the JT Money, who that, you know what I'm saying, that was playing in New York as... Maybe, I don't know, it was some Southern shit on the radio, and I had never expected that.
Okay.
But that happened at that Super Bowl in 99. Okay. So Super Bowl is a big deal for everybody involved. And yes, I would throw my hat in the ring if I had the opportunity and the Twitter fingers to do so.
Twitter fingers, that's what this is.
You know what I'm saying?
About.
Yes, definitely the Twitter fingers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Bear it up.
Well, not too far from Miami is a state called Texas.
That's far.
Well, it's the South.
But it's far.
Well, to me, a New Yorker.
You can't. That ain't no.
It's close.
That ain't no short
closer
drive.
To New York.
It might be easier to take a boat, but it ain't no close scenario. But yes, it is the South.
But you were talking about something about Texas earlier.
Okay, what about it?
You were telling me about something about the cop girl.
Amber.
Amber.
You could have brought up Amber. Amber Geiger.
Geiger.
Amber Geiger, who...
She, let me
who
show.
Bust into somebody's apartment, my man Bo, and shot him. Rest in peace. As he was chilling in his crib.
Eating ice cream
in his
watching
shorts.
Watching TV.
Chilling. Next thing he know...
This bitch.
She in his crib with the gun, hit him with the double tap. Pop, pop.
Okay. So... You know, I didn't learn until today that outside of his door, when you see, I was looking at the cop cam. What do you call it? Body vest camera.
She ain't have us on, but go ahead.
Right. What's the body vest?
Body
camera
cam.
On? Body cam. Cop cam. Whatever. There was a bright ass, red ass, fucking mat in front of his fucking.
Yeah, that's
door.
The whole point of contention. She didn't have one. He had one.
So the door looked different.
But you stepped on a motherfucking mat.
You see a red ass mat.
Mm-hmm.
It smelled like marijuana. And I saw a comment today that said, every person's house has a distinctive smell.
You're right. And she stepped in that shit, knew that wasn't her house.
Knew that wasn't your furniture.
Even if you opened the door and you smelled that shit, you knew that wasn't your house.
If your door is cracked open, who opens that shit?
First of all, it wasn't cracked open. Cause
she said it was, she put her key in and realized it was open. And
listen,
she,
listen, man. Key, I guess shit. That's all what they could prove in the evidence and what had to happen in the court. But in the court of speculation, we ain't got to go by that. In the court of speculation, they already show how all the doors in that apartment complex closes automatically.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? On with the electric lock.
So then how'd she get in?
Well, there's plenty of people that are saying that she was banging on the door. You know what I'm saying? That, but, you know, again, that was, I don't know if that was entered in evidence or nothing, but when that was initially happened, there were plenty of people that saying that she was yelling and banging at the door. Now, he could have opened it, and then she blasted his motherfucking ass. You know what I'm saying? But I guess none of that was entered in the record, so that's only for the speculation report. But either way, she busted in there, killed the man, went to trial, and it seemed like, you know what I'm saying, I was on bated breath because, you know, it seemed like they was going to let her escape. You know what I'm saying? They put the castle law, they just said the castle rule could apply.
It
where,
didn't apply because that only applies when it's your home.
Yeah, but they saying that if whatever the motherfucking...
The judge was a black woman, by the way.
But she's known for not being... You think they chose a hard black woman? Come on, you think to move jurisdiction to go to a woman that's hard on, you know what I'm saying? They chose her because she's, you know what I'm saying, hard on crime and lean more on cops. So, yeah, you know what I'm saying? It's, if you look, they're saying there's a lot of questionable shit she has done in her 10 years.
Really?
Yeah. So they're not going to move the jurisdiction from tech, from Dallas, where they felt like she wouldn't get a fair trial, to move her to a place where, you know what I'm saying, it was going to be even harder.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? So they moved it to a judge, probably that they felt like they could get a better chance at, you know what I'm saying, leniency.
Well, the prosecutor was the bomb because he, I guess, I saw that clip online last week on Friday when she testified and she was just like, I wish it was me instead of him who got shot. I wish he had the gun and shot me. She's, but the, it's the butt.
Mm-hmm.
You're never sorry when it's a butt.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, but you never use a butt. You
she
use
said,
it.
But what?
But I was so scared. And that's kind of like the default.
Yeah, that's the default white woman. Shit. You know right. what I'm saying? White lady tears.
Right. And I think if she was a little more attractive, maybe she would have had a better chance.
That, nah, see, you back to the colorism.
Colorism? The bitch is ugly. And she's blonde.
I understand.
She's on the top of the fucking food chain.
She was pretty. She was pretty. It'd be okay
she's
for her to shoot
him. She's pretty ugly.
It would be okay for her to shoot him if she was
well,
pretty?
Well, I feel away, so I'm going to be petty. The bitch is ugly.
Okay. All right. She was ugly anyway because she shot the man in
and
cold
And she
blood.
Was sleeping with her partner who was married. Her credibility's already bad.
I mean, she's out here. She's really out here.
She
out here. But now she gonna now she gonna be in there.
She gonna be under there.
She gonna be in there. But anyway, she I thought they was gonna let her skate with the stand your ground shit because they were saying that if the mistake of her being in the wrong place applied, then the stand your ground shit would apply.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? I was like, oh Lord, they done got the technicality. They was gonna let her skate. It's some bullshit. But, you know, they found...
I think that red mat did her in.
They found her guilty.
The red mat. You couldn't go around
I think. I think the fact that she used her training, the kill training, to kill him, because she admitted to hitting him with double tap, which is a training to be able to kill somebody.
Well, she shot to kill instead of to injure and stuff.
That's what I'm saying. She admitted...
She could have retreated out of the apartment.
She admitted to shooting to kill. I think what doomed her was that she could have did a whole bunch of other shit instead of even going up in there. She said she heard noises that weren't supposed to be there before she went in. You know what I'm saying? She went in, you know what I'm saying, and then automatically went straight to the kill.
On some George Zimmerman shit.
Exactly. Except for they got it right this time. Let's see what that sentencing do, though.
Hallelujah.
But, you know what I'm saying, the good thing is the same jury does the sentencing in Texas. The jury that convicts you does your sentencing. So
that's
you know what I'm saying? At least we know they felt like she was guilty, so let's see what kind of time they want to give her.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently she's supposed to do at least 5 years. We'll see.
I hope she gets at least 15.
Five to life. The other police, the black police that did some crazy shit, He got 12 years.
What black police?
Another black police in Texas that did some crazy shit. I don't be remembering their names.
Oh.
He just did some shit. I ain't against the police, man, because I know they got a job to do, and criminals got a job to do.
I love the police.
You know what I'm saying? Criminals got their job, they going to do. Police got their job, they going to do. And then there's people like me that's in the middle.
And a lot of times, can I be honest, you just got to, if you give cops, just like any person, any human being, just show them some respect. Let me tell you why. I taught a film camp at Howard University over summer to some kids from 9 to 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to pick a subject that we want to do a documentary on.
Mm-hmm.
And we did it on their fear of police and those cop shooting videos.
Mm-hmm.
And all the kids were terrified. And we had a retired D.C. policeman come in. And he had some good points. He said sometimes, he's like any human being, if you get pulled over and you like, come on, man, I ain't do nothing. I ain't showing you shit, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's going to put any human being on guard,
mm-hmm.
right? I think that sometimes, like, all of these cop shooting videos that we've seen have been unjustified, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've not
mm-hmm.
seen anyone, especially with the situation with Philando Castile, right?
Mm-hmm.
He did everything right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think police brutality is real. But I have a friend who got pulled over in Harlem, and she was telling me about how she cursed the cops out.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, why would you do that? She's like, fuck him. And we were driving by. She's like, oh, that's that motherfucker. I'm like, what? You need to relax. Like,
why are
you poking? Like, just make your life easier. Stroke his ego. Who cares? You'll get away. Like, I've been pulled over. I've done things. And then I get away because I just be like, oh, I'm sorry, officer. I fucking start acting.
Everybody got their way. You know what I'm saying? Because everybody got a response that they going to evoke. You know what I'm saying? You a red girl. You might have a different
that ain't
response.
Got shit it do. To it do. With it
do. If no, I'm a, if I'm a, if I'm a, no. if I'm a, if I'm me, same me, same color. I got a mouth full of gold teeth and dreads. I'm gonna evoke a different response from a police.
Yes, but if he pulls you over and you say, "Hi, officer."
I'm not saying hi, officer.
So and that's no, the only never. Difference. It ain't got shit to do with my complexion.
I ain't never saying hi,
officer.
I'm gonna
say hi, officer.
I'm not.
Well, how may I help you? What did I do? I'm going mm-hmm. to fucking put on my fucking...
Because that's where you at. I'm never gonna
only
say...
Only because my only agenda is always to get home safe.
And not be the people who get killed.
And to keep it moving.
That's gonna be the people who get fucked up.
The people that be nice?
Yeah, that just trying to get home. I'm just, you know, why you fuck with me? And they got a warrant and shit. They like, damn, they just trying to get home. Me, I know I'm clean. I know I'm good.
I'm so mad that you had to make it about my complexion.
I'm just saying.
That's
you gonna have a you're gonna evoke a different response.
You're right in a way.
I'm just saying. I didn't say in your specific case that's only thing what it is. I'm just saying in general, everyone evokes a different response by how they present. If I'm presenting Super Thug with the set from the corner paraphernalia, he gonna treat me as such. If I'm presenting as big time dope boy in a Maybach, he gonna approach me as such.
I'm not talking about how you look. I'm talking about how you speak to the officer.
And I'm about to tell you this. I do not speak to the officer in a nice way. I don't speak to him in a disrespectful way either. I'm handling the business just like he got to handle his business. He got a job to do, I got a job to do. My job to get home, his job to do what the fuck ever he got to do. When he come to me, I ain't got shit to say, man. Here go my motherfucking credentials, man. Take these shits and do what you got
to
do.
So you're coming from a perspective of having a distrust of and a disrespect of police officers,
which is
valid.
How is it a disrespect when I didn't disrespect this man?
Because to me,
I gave him exactly what he came for with no questions and no motherfucking answers.
To me, I look at it like I think cops, and listen, I almost like got into some trouble in Harlem like filming a cop once. I've done it mm-hmm. twice, right? And a lot of them are racist and be on some bullshit,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I'm just not, like, so when I was living in L.A., I remember I saw this bad accident on Melrose, and I was so fucking stunned. I'm looking at this car that was smashed up. It was like a luxury car, right? Like a Lambo or some shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so, like, enthralled and rubbernecking. I was rubbernecking, sorry. And I ran the fucking red light in front of the cops.
Mm-hmm.
So the one white cop, he come up like, what the fuck are you doing? What? Hold on.
and he's screaming at me, and I'm like, I'm behind my wheel, and I rolled down the window. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm sorry. I was like, I just never saw anything like that before. I'm so sorry.
Right.
And he's like, do you want that to happen to you? Do you want to end up like this guy? And I'm like, right. No. He's like, go home. And I'm like,
that's a valid response
but
to that
scenario.
But if
I was like, yo, officer, I mean, it's my bad. I fucking saw an accident, so I was looking. Why you in my face? Why you yelling at me?
But,
like, that would have put him on defense.
Right.
And then he'd have been like, show me your ID and registration.
Right. And that's valid.
That's all I'm saying.
But what I said is, I'm not going to disrespect the man, but I'm not going to talk extra and sweet either. My shit is going to be to the point. I know what he came for. He came to get this license and registration. That shit going to already be in my hand ready for him when he get to my window.
Yes.
And we ain't got to do no talking.
Valid.
And he going to take that shit, and he going to run that shit, and that shit coming back clean.
We talking about two different things.
But that's what I'm trying to tell you.
We talking about two different things.
I'm not finna be sweet.
We talking about two different things.
I don't have no disrespect of the man. I just know he got a job, and I got a job. And I know he pulled me over on some 9 times out of 10 on some bullshit.
And psychologically, I'm walking into it knowing that a lot of these motherfuckers are bitter because they not making the money they want to make. And if they see you driving a nice car and they schlepping through life, I watch Training Day. I mean, hello. Right. You know what I mean? I grew up in Harlem with the 30th Precinct. They called them the Dirty 30.
Mm-hmm.
So I already knew from early that a lot of these cops were not happy with the money that they was making. I would see how they would pull the drug dealers over. I saw all that shit, and I was paying attention. And my mom always told me, like, listen more than you talk and watch.
Right.
I watched everything, and I would listen, and I would talk, and I would get information.
Right.
So I'm like, well, especially if you know you ain't even on the up and up, that's even more of a reason. If you got a suspended license or a warrant, that's even more of a reason to be on some chill shit. Because I just feel like if I'm dealing with someone who's irrational and bitter because he's making $50,000 a year and my car is worth more than his yearly salary, I am not going to fucking poke him because he's looking for it.
Yeah, you ain't going to poke him, but you ain't got to stroke him either.
Like now, like my friend, he lives in Jersey City, right? And he lives in this, you know, like high-end, high-rise.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's always like, you can just feel the fucking racism, right? And some chick gets on the elevator one day. She's just like, we got off a stop. He's on the 50th floor, so we got off on 37 so I can go back up to get a sweater. We get on the elevator, she's like, it's going up. We just ignored her. It's going up. Ignored her again. He gave her a little subtle nod. You know, he's Nigerian. He's from London. They got a different, like, they just move different, right? So she got uncomfortable because we didn't react, but we knew what was behind her shit.
Right.
But I just feel like people are looking for us to react.
And
they're
exactly,
looking for
but
a
that's
reaction.
Why you ain't got to react.
I'm never going to give it to
you. You jump in front of it and go ahead and handle the business. But I'm gonna end with this point right here.
Okay.
When you see all the names that we talk, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And Trayvon ain't had nothing to do with the police, but Trayvon, you know, Mike Brown, motherfucking, you know, Eric Garner. All these people, right?
Mm-hmm.
They just, you know what I'm saying? They just getting by, you know what I'm saying? None of them names what we talk about ain't never a real, true, super criminal ass motherfucker.
Never. And I actually think Eric Garner was right when he was like, y'all keep bothering me.
Right.
People saying he resisted. No, it's like he was exhausted with them always harassing him.
But them super criminal motherfuckers, they don't treat like they treat Eric Garner. You know what I'm saying?
What do you mean?
When motherfuckers is actually about that business, they don't treat them the same way. They treat them because they understand the rules of the streets. That's what the police play in the streets more than you as a regular person and me as a regular person.
Mm.
They play, it's cops and robbers. They play with real motherfuckers who do this shit.
Like training,
so they play by the rules of the motherfuckers who really do this shit. And then when you out here, you say you a regular old citizen just trying to get to work tomorrow, they know you don't want to go to jail. So they fucking with you.
So by design, they're poking.
They fucking with you.
No, I
know. You
know
what I'm saying? So that's why you don't never see it. Don't never be the super.
But we not saying different things.
I know. That's what I'm just trying to tell you is that, you know what I'm saying? It's a certain communication that everybody know, all right, I'm going to let you do your job. You let me do mine. You know what I'm saying? And it ain't, and it's a whole thing in the middle where some people going to be sweet, some people going to be this, some people going to, it's all the way down the line. Me, I'm going to keep it very, very fucking neutral. I'm going to give you what you want, and then we going to get on about our day.
So I guess it's one of these cases that I probably shouldn't even have an opinion on it because of my privilege.
No, no, it's not that.
I'm being dead serious.
No, it's not that. It's
because my experience with coming in contact with cops is going to be a gonna lot, be different, lot different
than other people. That's all I was saying. And I just use your color just as a throwback to what we was talking about.
I was triggered when you said
I understand that. I understand. But I do this over here. But what it is that everybody triggers. It's like me. When I was doing dirt in the streets, right? And we rolling out of town, riding dirty than a motherfucker. And police pulled me over. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's going to be a lot different than if he pulled us over and my man that with the gold teeth is driving.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I know what he going to ask me. He going to ask me where I'm going, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to answer for all that shit. That's real legit. Real, you know what I'm saying? My shit is going to be right down the line. I'm going to give him the shit he want. He going to run my shit. It ain't going to be nothing to even look at. And then he going to send me on about my way. Mm-hmm. Dirty than a motherfucker.
And that was all by design. That's the media and everything portrayed black men that look a certain way to be criminals.
But it's also, and it's also his own experience every day dealing with motherfuckers. Yeah. Yeah, okay, he see some black motherfucker. Okay, boom. He know. You know what I'm saying? He knew. Mm-hmm. But when he got up on it, it wasn't what he expected. Because, you know what I'm saying, they profiling. He learning the profile. He's learning the profile of how a motherfucker's supposed to act, supposed to say, supposed to do, his heart rate, his sweat rate, all right. that. Right. You know what I'm saying? But when you throw them and they don't know, like, okay, right. it's different.
Because we're uh-huh. dehumanized. So that you know what I'm comes back to us being creators, right?
Right. And so you create what the motherfucker need to see and get on about your way.
Right. So it's our job to humanize people that might have the dreads and the gold teeth.
Yeah,
because you know whoever's in control of the images is in control of the self-esteem.
Yeah, but then it's going
wait the self-esteem, the self-preservation. Wait,
who are you? What
the self? You? I said whoever's in control of the images is in control of the self-esteem, self-preservation, and the confidence of the people.
Okay, word up.
So we are content creators, and we can change the narrative.
And that's what we do. And on that note, we going to roll up out of here. You know what I'm saying? So tell them where you're going to be, where they can find you.
Oh, my Instagram and Twitter is at Tony Thai, TONITHAI, like Thai food. And I'm not Thai. It's a fucking nickname.
Okay. Where you going to be? What you got coming? Tell them where to find your work.
All right. So you can find my work. You can come to my website, TonyThai.com. I'm going to be in L.A. We have our next tour date for Space for Creators for Potty Break. That's going to be on September 29th. I'll have the details on my social media. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just come and find me. We just had a screening in the park last week, St. Nicholas Park. We showed my short film before the Grace Jones documentary.
When the tour hit L.A.?
October 26th.
October 26th.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So y'all check that out. And, you know, you can find me at Mr. Muhammad on Instagram, at Mr. Muhammad on Twitter. I'm local this week. And, shit, and, you know, till the next time, you know, tell a friend to tell a friend.
Happy birthday, Nigeria.
Ooh, I thought you was going to say happy birthday to me.
Happy belated birthday, Ali.
Listen. You know,
it is your scarf.
All right, let me get back to this finale.
It's your 21st.
Until then, tell a friend to tell a friend and even the enemy.
So get in the conversation.
Yeah.